This episode is sponsored by Gusto, online payroll and benefits software built for small businesses. You are listening to Nakedly Examined Music, a podcast about songs and songwriters. My name is Mark Linsenmeyer. My guest for episode 250 is Bill Pritchard, a British singer-songwriter who started out doing synth-heavy tunes with his first album in 1987. Within a couple of albums, he'd shifted to the jangly guitar pop you're now hearing from his biggest single, Tommy & Co., from his fourth album, 3 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days, from 1989. He retired after just one more album in 1991, but after a couple of false starts, he came back with a vengeance, releasing albums 8 through 13 between 2014 and the present. Today we'll be talking about Perpetual Tourist from his new album, Haunted, then Trentham from A Trip to the Coast, 2014, and Pig Ale on a Tuesday is Charming from Parts of K, 1988. We'll conclude by listening to the title track from the new record, Haunted. For more information, please see BillPritchardMusic.com. For more about this podcast, see NakedlyExaminedMusic.com. And to support the effort, get this episode ad-free, as well as my detailed episode notes, go to Patreon.com/NakedlyExaminedMusic. I will play a little bit of Tommy & Co. from 3 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days, 1989. Your fourth album, I guess?
Well, it was sort of really my third album, but it was the first album I did on a label called Play It Again, Sam, which is a Belgian label, but it was a very big indie European label at the time. And I think the thing with Tommy & Co., I had the opportunity of inviting Françoise Hardy, who was a 60s French icon from the Yeah Yeah period that I absolutely loved. And she sings backing vocals on this particular track.
You know, we're going to play something from one of your albums before that at the end of this interview, but you've already kind of adopted more or less the guitar-based pop that we're going to hear, pop rock, you know, that we're going to hear for these songs that we're focusing on, whereas the stuff before that was Joy Division, Depeche Mode, you know, synth heavy.
There were synths involved, correct. I could say, well, I couldn't afford an orchestra, you know, so I had to get a synthesizer instead, you know what I mean? But yeah, it is interesting the way it evolved. In fact, what was quite curious was the first album that I recorded was my Bill Pritchard album, very synthetic. And I did it at a studio in London with an engineer who was a friend from the school area, but then he came and became an engineer and stuff, lovely fella. I did this, but I was really unhappy with the sound. So 6 months later, I released Half a Million, which is a completely acoustic album that I recorded everything with. And I was pleased with that. And it was primarily acoustic guitar and vocal, more of a kind of a balladeer thing than the initial one, because I didn't feel comfortable with the direction of the first album at all. But then the second one sort of moved me on, really, and it gained interest in certain places. And as a result, the third album, as you say quite correctly, was a duet with a hero of mine called Daniel Dark, who was in a band called Taxi Girl. And we did an album together called Parce Que, which is obviously French for because, whatever. But it's also a song by Charles Aznavour, which was sung by Serge Gainsbourg, who was a bit of a hero of mine. That was more kind of a mixture of the two, if you like, kind of synthy and guitar-based. You're right. So that came after Half a Million and before 3 months, yeah.
We'll get back to the early period later. I want to get right now to the thing you're actually promoting. This is the opening track from your new album, Haunted, Perpetual Tourist. Do you want to say just a few things about it? And then we'll hear it in full, and then we'll talk in much more detail.
Right. Well, Perpetual Tourist was a song I wrote last year, and I was thinking, I'm listening to a lot of kind of mid-period Iggy Pop, and I just thought, what would Iggy, I know it's a strange thing, I know, it's just that the way he delivers words, he's got, when I walk, obviously he wouldn't sing that, but it's like those short, pithy lines creating imagery. I think he's an extremely intelligent old Jim's, I mean, an extremely intelligent man. I've always been very influenced by him, strangely enough, and it's an odd thing to say. It's that kind of guitar feel to it. And Perpetual Tourist, it's weird because it's not autobiographical, but there are elements of me in there. It's a composite of different people. I don't look in detail on my lyrics, But there's always an element of movement, always an element of place, and there's always an element of movement in time as well. But this one is good because a lot of the verbs I use are always a transit, you know, whatever, movement. So you've got when I walked, and then you've got for the next songs have got verbs of movement as well. There always seems to be movement in everything I do. And Perpetual Tourist is a song that I'm particularly proud of.
When I walked, when I left her, from every car park to derailed traveller, I was the perpetual tourist. The perpetual tourist. When I drank, crossed the line, from every beer house to late night after hours, I was the perpetual tourist. Perpetual tourist. Got a job, lost a job, saw myself floating in and out of it. Perpetual tourist. I was the perpetual tourist. I was the perpetual tourist. I was the perpetual tourist.
This is a remarkably concise song. I normally, when I'm choosing, I don't know if it's less than 3 minutes, I kind of move to the but you had picked this one at the last minute. And I mean, I love it though. Both these two songs that we're going to go over, they each have a point at where I was calling it just in my notes for this, the spoon point. What is the point in which the chord progression takes a little turn that really grabs your heartstring, which here it's, yeah, actually it's right just getting into the chorus. I mean, just that movement to, I guess, just the relative minor, right?
Yes, I guess so. I mean, what's really cool is we've had a real collaboration here with, I did the demos of all the songs and then sent them off to the label, and because I really wanted to record it in Hamburg or get it involved in Hamburg. So there were some musicians in Hamburg, primary of which was Gunter Buskis, who done a fantastic job of interpreting and developing the way that these songs progress. But you're right, yes. I suppose relative minor, that's a nice, I've never heard of that before. But yeah, it goes into a different color, doesn't it?
Yes. I mean, the introduction, so it sounds like you're doubling your voice at that point and there's more reverb on it.
Definitely. Again, with Iggy Pop, and like I say, when I walk, you know what I mean? It can be that massive thing, and he's got an amazing voice. I mean, I don't want to single out Iggy Pop. I don't know why I'm talking about Iggy Pop.
Well, I was just excited that I'm interviewing somebody that has the same vocal range that I do. That we're when I walk, we could both be doing the slow.
Yeah,
slow.
We could do it as a duet. Yeah. When you start that thing, it's like, I don't know if you, when you're writing, it's fun, isn't it? It kind of follows on. I like the idea of perpetual tourist. I like the word tourist and I like the word perpetual. So the idea of like never ending. And I like the idea of this never ending thing. But when you kind of think about a nice pithy line, like when I walked, and then you've got a character. Now, what's this character do? Is he walking away or is he just carrying on walking forever? And then when I left her, now, when I left her, it could be I just left her to go down the supermarket to buy a tin of baked beans, or it could be the most profound thing. You know, when I left her, it could be your part of your philosophical debate, you know, when I left the whole existential existence. You know what I mean? I prefer the baked beans story personally, you know.
From every car park to derailed travel. I mean, you've disambiguated there.
Giving you a clue about where he's going, I suppose, or she's going and that. From every car park to derailed travel. Because that could be like he's just been everywhere, she's just been everywhere. I was the perpetual tourist. I mean, is he bragging about it, or is he embarrassed, or is he on the run? Well, perpetual tourist, for me, doesn't mean this, but it's got connotations in English, presumably, of somebody who goes from country to country to avoid paying taxes, you know. So there's that kind of thing as well. That's not this character. It's certainly not me.
Well, it's a remarkably concise storytelling in that you're coloring this picture of what sounds like an alcoholic drifter, you know, can't keep a job. From every beer house to late night after hours, I mean...
In my head, I was in Bonn. And in Bonn, there were a load of, like, these little stubers, like these night places. But also, there were late night places as well. In Derby, were coming into my head. But in Bonn, I did a degree in Politische Wissenschaft, which is political studies or whatever it is. And I spent 6 months there in Bonn. And this was, at the time, Mark, when it was just... pre the Berlin Wall coming down. But I remember that late night after hours, I loved that kind of the beer house, beer light. I always remember that line from Bowie and Ziggy Stardust about the beer. It's follow the beer light. I don't know, I probably got it wrong. That imagery I really liked, and I could see this character now walking into that place, the after hours club, you know. So it probably is a drifter, an alcoholic drifter, you know.
So was this written sequentially? Are there four more verses somewhere?
There's loads of verses, Mark. There's tons of verses.
That you just cut it down to the essential.
Exactly. To make it concise. I mean, sometimes, especially with this album, this is my latest book. So that is all the lyrics and things and words and ideas. It's not random cut-ups, but you take ideas, you think, oh, that's a good one. And then you take that and you extrapolate. You basically take that idea and run with it. That's what I did with when I walked, when I left her, from every beer house, from every car park to derailed travel. And then it's when I drank, cross the line. Now you see, cross the line. I love the terms that can actually mean various things. Cross the line. So what's, you know, that you cross the line in football and, you know, you cross the line, but then you go too far. You know, is he going to end up in prison? You don't know, do you? This is fascinating, Mark. I have never analysed my lyrics in this manner in my life. Apart from in French, I used to do it in French. There was a program. It was like this really artistic, like intellectual French show that they used to invite me on. They really analysed the words. And it was quite interesting. But I'm analysing my words myself this time. They were doing it for me. You know, it's great.
Plenty of the people I talk to, they're like, well, I don't think about this. I don't even know why I wrote. So even though you wrote them, in a way, you're not in a terrifically more privileged position than anybody else.
No, I'm never more responsible than you are, yeah.
Except that you do know, actually, given the second song we're going to talk about in a minute, I was very surprised that there's not any specific place names, anything like that in this one, because the next one is just, it seems like throughout your work, you love to pile those details on.
Obviously, I contacted you in email and I suddenly thought with this idea that you had being so specific, it was quite unusual. That's why it kind of attracted me, the whole idea of it. Oh, yeah, well, this is different. I've never heard somebody asking me to do this before. You know what I mean? It's a big body of work because I'm a very, very, very old person. And I've been doing this for a very, very, very long time. So, and I've been releasing stuff. So as a consequence, I was thinking, what have these got in common? Well, they've got movement and they've got place specifics. But perpetual tourist, you see, I had tourist and perpetual. I didn't even know, Mark, I didn't even know perpetual tourist was a term. I thought I'd made it up. And I think it's quite niche, shall we say. So I think it's between you and me. And I don't think we particularly want to broadcast it. But anyway, perpetual tourist. I love the idea. I love the thing because I got tourists and thought, somebody's doing all the time, perpetual tour, and it's a nice perpetual tour. It's rhyming.
Well, it also sounds like a, you know, a rock and roll touring lifestyle that often leads to a divorce. There's, you know.
Yeah, this could be a classic song written by somebody when I drank Cross the Line. Yeah, it could be.
Let's talk about the choice of instruments, the ensemble here. So you were saying Gunther, was it, so you're using their band? Like, is this like the organ part? I know you play keyboard as well as guitar, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So like, was that organ riff that's responding?
That was Gunther.
Oh, okay.
It was a revelation, really was. I've made quite a few albums, and I can quite honestly say this one is a sequel to two albums that I did called 3 months, 3 weeks and 2 days, and Jolly, which were done 20, 30 years ago. I mean, I was looking at 3 months just before you came. It was reissued as a double album. But to be honest with you, he really upped the game. And the way he interpreted the songs, those little flourishes, are him. It was great. But it's still, he managed to keep the essence of the song. It sounds like a Bill Pritchard album, Tapete, the label that I'm on. I've worked with him for over 10 years and I've released stuff for over 10 years, but I like and respect that label. It's got a very, very positive and caring attitude, both to the artists it nourishes and to the people, that the staff as well, which I find very encouraging, to be honest, which is, you know, it's a nice thing.
Was he acting as the producer then for this album?
I would say the producer. He also interpreted the guitars, or he'd use the guitar stems that I'd use, and then he would amp them up. Say there's a song called Smile where we've used that, but we've enhanced it by taking it into a studio in Hamburg and improving the sounds, really.
So was this you sending files back and forth, or was this you going to Hamburg?
No. This was sending files back and forth. I actually never left Stoke.
It's an interesting question then. Who counts as the, who is the, because it's a financial position, right? If you're listed as the producer on the record, then at least it used to be that you get a third of it up front or something ridiculous like that. I know we're dealing with much lower margins at this point. And so, you know.
I have no idea what a producer really means.
Okay.
It's a fluid term. I have no real idea what a director means in things, but that's obviously in terms of film. But I have absolutely no idea what anything of that, anybody of that means. And I think it's quite a fluid term.
Sure, sure.
It's like a manager of a band. You know, what does that mean? A manager, they made it up. You know what I mean? And they were, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think these are financial categories primarily. So I think if you're the one calling the shots and paying the bills, and then you're the producer, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. All right. According to your dictionary, yes, he is definitely the producer.
Okay. Because, yeah, the label. Yeah. So what about the rest of these? Just the choice of, well, your approach to harmony vocals. I assume that is something that you probably had some strong opinions on, because that's just you doing all those, the oohs and.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. So what are the basic guitars? Were obviously done in the studio called the Colas Studio, which I've got a friend, he's a very talented guy, brilliant pair of ears, called Scott Ralph. And we spent 3 days redoing the vocals in Stoke, well, in the Colas Studio, then taking some time to do the harmonies, which we did between us. So myself, I did the harmonies mostly, but he with his suggestions sometimes, because I felt that I really wanted to kind of really, you know, I love harmonies and I really wanted to kind of go to town on that. So we really, really spent a lot of time on the vocals because they're the primary part of the whole operation, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, unless they're instrumentals. They're songs, aren't they? You know what I mean? For this particular thing.
Let me play just a little clip. So this is the last verse.
Got a job. Lost a job.
It sounds like you're playing multiple different brand acoustics on top of each other, slightly different, because there's a nice little kind of clash there.
I'm left-handed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I play a right-handed guitar left-handed. As you put it, it was a financial consideration because when I was a kid, left-handed guitars were more expensive than right-handed guitars. I either have to buy a really crappy left-handed guitar, or I can get a slightly better one, much better one, and just learn the chords the wrong way around for everybody else. So if you listen, I've got a very unusual sound that I create by recording. So I basically have always played a right-handed guitar with the left hand because I'm left-handed. So that's why you get these unusual sounds coming through. And yes, I did. I overdubbed. We put a lot of acoustics on there.
It sounded like there might have even been like a triangle or something, just something to thicken, make it a little more shimmery.
There might be sort of a glockenspiel sound or a stylophone sound, but there was a review in a National French magazine that somebody sent me about it. It was a really good review, but what I loved was the fact it's the first time I've ever had seen in a review of an album giving a review of a xylophone. I think that's great, a xylophone on a pop song. I loved that. I thought that was brilliant. In fact, I must send that to Gunter because I think that's a great thing. It's the sounds that the mixer can really get as well. You know what I mean?
Let's stop for some ads. I want to talk to you about Gusto. Running a small business is hard. The economy is a lot right now. You can't control interest rates or tariffs, but you can control how effectively your business operates. Automating payroll and HR with Gusto is one of the fastest ways to cut friction and focus on what actually moves the needle. Gusto is online payment and benefit software built for small businesses. It's all-in-one, remote-friendly, and incredibly easy to use, so you can pay, hire, onboard, and support your team from anywhere. Gusto is used at my day job. I get a notification from Gusto when my money has come in. It is putting together tax information. It is performing direct deposits. Anything else that an employer wants to put in there, like health benefits, commuter benefits, 401k, or that they have to put in there, say because of the laws that vary from state to state to state, Gusto is going to handle that. Switching to Gusto is very easy. It is one of the first things that my current employer did when he bought the company. Gusto is rated number one on G2's highest satisfaction products list for 2026 and trusted by over 400,000 small businesses. And you don't pay a cent until you run your first payroll. So you can look at all the functionality, get things set up with absolutely no cost. There are no hidden fees and no surprises. Try Gusto today at gusto.com/NEM and get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. That's 3 months of free payroll at gusto.com/NEM. One more time, gusto.com/NEM. Well, let's get the second song out there to get more of this. I think even though this is a decade ago, this is basically the same mission. This is also a less than 3 minute song. Trethem, another opening track from A Trip to the Coast 2014. It's mastered a little lower. Maybe the drums are a little less prominent. So even though you're playing kind of like the Who or something, but it's a very gentle mix overall. But we've also got the same kind of rich harmonies, the glockenspiel sort of sound, the clock tower sound. Yeah, anything else you want to say before they hear it?
This is a very bright, you know, musically, a very brightly coloured thing. I was always really impressed by, I've been a massive fan for years, by a bloke called Roy Wood. And Roy Wood was The Move. Now, The Move did some fantastic, The Move were my favourite band of all time. And they were local to us. I mean, Roy Wood didn't really live very far from here when he was brought up in near Birmingham. His use of guitars is so good. So you've got that kind of pop, and his pop sensibility was amazing. I've also used, with the lyrics, this is very specific. I thought, let's start something really, really parochial almost. Because this was the first album I put out for years. I basically did the classic thing of, in my 30s, stopped doing any tours, got a job, lost a job, yeah. So I did a PGCE, so it's like a post-degree thing in teaching, so I could teach German and French. We wanted a family, so brought up two daughters. So I did nothing. I was interviewed, and I forgot about this. I was interviewed by somebody, but it was a magazine, and they said, so what did you do? And he said, I was making this album called The Audience of One. And he said, what do you mean? Well, I'd got a studio in the back garden. I'd just go and record, but I wouldn't send it off or anything, right? So then in 2012-13, so this went on for years because I never released anything. So
I saw you had one album from 2005 or something, is that right? I wasn't able to find that.
Wow, that's amazing, because that, oh God, Mark, you on that? Yeah, so that's a very interesting, because I thought, okay, I've done enough teaching. Somebody came to me and said, look, would you like to? So in my studio in the garden, I went in and recorded some songs. They produced them, and we got signed by Universal. It's the only time, Mark, that I've directly been signed to a major label. And it was a dis. Well, it just didn't work for me at all. I loved the opportunity to work in some incredible studios. I loved the people that I worked with, and I'm still in contact with them now. They're great, but just did not work at all.
So it was a false restart to your career, and then the real one happened in 2011 or so.
Yeah, correct.
And then you've had a steady string of albums since then.
I'm not being very concise here, unlike Perpetual
Tourist.
Well,
I mean, this was the big question, that you had this big gap.
Yeah, I basically became a dad. Mm-hmm. It sounds a bit kind of cliche, but I did that thing, did the whole thing.
I mean, that's so much better than the typical rock star missing your children's childhoods and whatever. Like,
yeah, you can't do that. I mean, the most important thing, everything else is just unimportant. This isn't, you know what I mean? It's the most important thing, isn't it, Mark? You know what I mean? It's the idea of community, communication, and developing other skills. So I developed the ability to work with autistic students, students with additional needs. And I felt like it was good because it wasn't, I found towards the end when with Jolly that I wasn't enjoying being creative anymore because there was a financial, there you go, producer, there's a financial consideration that you've got to earn enough, you know what I mean? So you're doing that, so you've got there. And also, it kind of limits your experience as well. I've always found that it's just natural, isn't it? You write from experience. Now, if your experience is that treadmill of going on tour, doing the dad, doing this, and not actually developing and changing, naturally, you're going to try and get your influences, but the influences will be from where you got them initially, which is when you had a much more rich and interesting, in a way, some may say, life before. So that's why the kind of some of them kind of deteriorate. I'm not saying everybody's at all, but I found personally that I like the balance because it's much more interesting. 2014, was it? When I did my first album, 15, something like that.
Well, Trentham is from 2014. I saw there was...
14, okay.
Earlier, so, yes. Back to 2011 or so. Trip to the Coast. Oh, no, this is it. Trip to the Coast, 2014. Okay, I'm wrong.
Right. No, you're not. You're actually very right. Well, because I started thinking about... This is weird. I was invited to do a festival right out of the blue. The internet started. So I thought I managed to disappear completely and I was in the other thing. But I was doing this secret. The internet started. So this is 2011. So I'd gone back for 6 years. And then this guy kept asking me to do this festival in France, okay, in Normandy. And I said, no. But he kept saying, well, you can bring your family. So I thought, okay. And then we had a whole holiday. He said, all you got to do is this festival and you can stay in a jeep and we can do these things. So we did. And so eventually I said, oh, be a laugh, be a holiday, won't it? So I did it and I really enjoyed it. The festival got, this is great, this is so Pritchard. The festival was closed because it was being used by travellers the day before, went and used it. But they said, no problem. I thought, oh, great. Good for them. So we're not doing it, said, oh, yes, we are. We ended up doing it in a big, my first ever gig, in a big Catholic church that he'd managed to persuade a person to do. But it was amazing. I really enjoyed it.
So these songs for this album were already written for that, or that was just you playing your old
stuff? No, this wasn't anything to do with that. Because what happened was, there was more interest than I realised. It was much bigger than I thought it would be. People coming up to me, I thought, what are you doing talking to me? And they knew all my albums and everything, and I thought, this is weird.
I mean, you put your time in the 80s, getting this fan base and going, touring around, doing your...
Well, I know, but the thing is, you'd think people would have the decency to forget about it, wouldn't you? You know what I mean? Anyway, so I did this thing, and then one of them said, who played bass with me, to be fair, because I had this band that were from France who wanted to play with me, so I played with them on this gig, and he said, look, have you got new songs? And I played them. He said, you can't just let these go. You've got to really... And I thought about it. So I thought, okay, well, I'll send them to one. So I sent them to Tupper. And then a few days later, they said, yeah, we'll sign you. So fair enough. And that was it. That's how we started it.
All right, let's go ahead and put Trentham for the folks to hear in.
Trentham, I can't believe what you do. Some days seems like your advert rings true. And even when I see you grieve, we all know where we've been. Shooting ducks on the lake. so sane. Sneakily walking around like you got Monday, looking decidedly on. But then I took Milton Road, that's where my mind would explode. Thoughts in rain drove me insane, just like Westbrook. Bright lights of Hanley, the cultural quarter, with concrete masons and fallen daughters. Trenton, I can't believe what you do. Sundays seems like your advert rings true. And even when I see green, we all know where we'd be. Shooting ducks on the lake, all four stokes safe. And even when I see green, we all know where we'd be. Shooting ducks on the lake, all four stokes safe.
I'll share with the audience that we're actually going to do for the first song, Lille, which is your latest single. And you were like, we can't do all city songs. We have to do something else. Well, so here's a city song. It's very exaggerated. Seems like your advert rings true. The whole thing sort of sounds like an advertisement for look at the beautiful lakes. Look at the...
I wrote it in Trentham Gardens. Trentham isn't a city as such, sounds like it. It's a part of Stoke, a little kind of like little district, little area of Stoke, yeah. And it's part of Trentham Gardens. Trentham Gardens is this quite well-established place where people, where we, you know, you walk and you picnic and things like that. So in a way, I was there, but also I was talking about then, I like the playing on words that even when I see green, and it was because it was a cold day, so it's icy, and there's a lake there, so the green pond, you know, it was like green in the pond and stuff, and then filming, it was shooting ducks, and I like that play on words with shooting. Shooting obviously I think it's more an Americanism, but it isn't that sort of taking pictures, shooting ducks on the lake.
I like the fact that you sent me, often I find the lyrics on the internet, and you actually sent me these, and each time it says shooting parentheses photo. Don't think that I'm meaning that I'm hunting, because that would ruin the
the illusion of kind of tranquility. But it also, the other thing that's interesting is at the time, I remember this, there was a culling of Canadian geese, I think it was, in a lake down the road. It wasn't Trentham Lake, but it was. They were getting really kind of heavy, these Canadian geese. You know, they were like really kind of giving it out. And yeah, I'm sure there was this culling. So there was this kind of, that's why I thought about that shooting ducks. It's a play on words, because they were Westport Lake, it was called, in Stoke. You would, I mean, it's very parochial. I mean, it's like a place that you would tell me from your place, really small, and go, you know this, Bill? No, I don't. I haven't got a bloody clue, you know. But filming ducks on the lake for Stoke's sake. But Snead Green is another part of Stoke. So he's moving now. Instead of moving maybe in a drunken manner in Perpetual Tourist, he's wandering around, like he's God. So he's obviously, something's really good has happened to him. And then Milton Road is the road to Derby, so it's the road north, eventually going to Macclesfield and Manchester. So they're very, very specific. Oh, Westport Lake is mentioned there. Sorry, I do apologise. So Foxy Lane drove me insane, just like Westport Lake. So that's where they were shooting the ducks. Yeah, so there you go. There was a duck culling thing going on because these Canadian geese were getting out of hand.
So this exaggerate, that's where my mind would explode on Milton Road. Foxley Lane, it drove me insane. I mean, in fact, one of the last episodes that I released was John S. Hall had released an album where he was sort of playing this persona of a stupid New Yorker who only knew how to express himself with profanity. So it'd just be like, oh, this fucking garden is so beautiful. Oh my God, it's just, so is that what's, that's what your version of this is, the exaggerated.
Yeah, it's my version of this. I'm barely,
oh, this is blowing my mind.
Yeah, it's blowing my mind. My mind will explode. Yeah, obviously. Yeah, that's where my mind would explode. So obviously, I was having a good day there, was I not, Mark?
I mean, walking around like you're God, like
I'm God. But I like that again. You know, that kind of walking around like you do something really good's happened, and then you're going like, I'm God here. This is it. You know what I mean? It doesn't last for long. But it's funny, yeah. Without the profanities I may have.
Yes, that was the ball. But just saying.
No, it's funny, yeah, I like it. And the bright lights of Hanley, that's a laugh, because Hanley is quite a poor area, but they decided to make it the city of culture, you know, and it was like it's an oxymoron, it's like mad. I love Hanley, don't get me wrong, but they built a thing called the Cultural Quarter. And it's just not a cultural, but, you know, they tried it. But right in the middle of this cultural quarter, for months, even almost a year, there was this concrete mixer in the middle of it. So you imagine a really kind of a cultural area. You've got all your theatres, which you don't really have. They had one theatre and a couple of bars, like, you know, and that was their cultural quarter. I'm not belittling it. It's really good. But they just had this concrete mixer. You know what a concrete mixer, you know, in the middle of this thing. It just stood there. It was like, it was almost like some kind of art. It became like an art exhibit to me. I thought, this is great.
Just this truck that never moved?
No, it's a concrete mixer. So it's not even a truck. It's
okay, I was picturing the truck that spins.
Yeah,
okay.
It's smaller than that. It just stood there. It just stayed there. It was just mad. And it was like, what is it? Is this some kind of an art thing? I love it. It wasn't, because, you know, but I loved that. But I loved that. I loved the kind of the idea of this cultural quarter and then this concrete mix of the two things were great. Because it just sums everything up. I just like the image of it, you know.
Well, and I was confused in the lyrics you sent me. It said, with concrete mixers and local daughters. But you specifically sing, and foreign daughters. I don't understand either of these. What are the daughters? What?
I have no idea. But it could be any daughters.
Okay.
I just put an adjective there, you know what I mean? You just choose what you want, you know, demonic daughters or, you know, delightful daughters. I don't know, I'm getting alliteration mad now here, but you know what I mean?
Sure.
You may just put what you want on, you know what I'm saying?
That ends up being the introduction of the bridge, that you play the first half of the bridge instrumental, and then you're going to sing against that. Yeah, and he thought about that structure, that there's a little more in this song than in the previous song. You're still not reaching 3 minutes, but we at least have a break here.
And there's also a middle eight there as well. It's a song from somebody who is saying, look, there is beauty, dignity, and amazing things that you will explode for in places that are, in terms of, you know, are downtrodden from other people's perspective. I can see how brilliant and beautiful both the place and the people are here. So that's what I'm doing. I'm almost defending. I'm saying, look, this is cool. Whatever you think, this is cool. You know what I mean?
So is Stoke known as being a little pastoral village, or as more like, oh, this is a slum kind of a...
it's a poor, it's a very, very poor...
An industrial town or a post-industrial.
Correct. And the problem is it's post-industrial. Before, it was ceramics, you know, pottery. Mm-hmm. So there was loads of pottery. There was a pottery industry. There was loads of ceramic industry there. But the problem was in the 80s, the pottery industry just completely fell to the wayside. Also, that was coincided with the coal industry also completely collapsing, both of which were the fundamental financial hubs of Stoke. So it kind of went downhill, like a lot of areas in Britain did, post the mines, post the ceramics. It's trading on its past glories to a certain extent. There is new industry coming in, but it's a slow process. But the people here are very communal, very family-based, very family-orientated. Up until a long time ago, it was the don't tend to move away.
Was that where you're from, or is that where you settled after your 30s?
I'm from a bit, I don't know, 20 miles away. So I was brought up in a place called Lichfield, which is near Birmingham. And then I went over to college or uni in Sheffield, learning mother languages and politics. And that's when I kind of my whole kind of vision of life really blossomed. Because up until that point, my mum and dad had never gone abroad. Well, I think they went abroad once or something. And abroad for us is much more obviously than it's.
Well, it's right nearby for you. For compared to in the US, I mean, it's a big.
I know. I realize I'm talking to you, Mark. That's, yeah. It's, you know, look, England, I think it's 24 miles away, Dover to Calais.
Uh-huh.
That's not very far. That's even closer. It's about the same distance for me from going from here to Manchester. You know what I'm saying? But in terms of your headspace and your vision, the way things change, it's massive. I had the opportunity, I went to Bordeaux University where I did l'IEP, which is the Institut d'Etudes Politiques, again, political studies, because it was a politically based degree that I was doing, but it was for France and Germany, for the languages that you were learning. And I had the opportunity of broadcasting on a thing called La Vie aux Grandes Herts, which was, at the time, there was a real flowering of independent radio in France, Radio Libre. They let all the people just have certificates, or they let you transmit radio programs, radio shows. And there was this radio show station called La Vie aux Grandes Herts. I was lucky because I met a friend of mine who's now a very well-known journalist. He was just a student at the time, you know, he's 19, 20 years old. We did a radio show on a Thursday, and I got introduced to so many French artists, so many French acts. Bordeaux is an amazing place, again, by the sea. I don't know where this is going, actually, Mark.
It's going to our third song, which is Back in Time. This is from that 1988 album, The Partake, by you and Daniel Dark. But this is one of your songs on A Pig Ale on a Tuesday is Charming.
Yes.
Which I picked out. It's another one. This one's less than 2 minutes. This was not intentional. You know, you have plenty of 5-minute songs and things, but this one, we get to hear the full-on syntho you, but it also has the acoustic guitar.
Yes, it's got the two together. That's what I was saying, Mark. There's a kind of a... I was going through a period here where I was mixing up the two. And I honestly, when I'm saying half joking, I would have loved a real orchestra, but couldn't afford it. To a certain extent, it is true. The synth line, I would have loved to have real violins and violas playing that and the cellos, but it wasn't to be. But I like the kind of lo-fi sound that it ended up getting. And that album was released originally, I think it was 88. It got re-released about 5 or 6 years ago or something. And again, it stood the test of time. I was being interviewed by Le Monde, which is the national French newspaper, about it. Daniel Dark, by this point, my mate, had become a bit of a legend because he died in 2013. But oh my God, Mark, he was such a talent, such an artist. But so he was very left-handed like me, as we put it this way. And he was very, very incredible poet in French. Very troubled man, but very funny. One of the funniest people.
Well, so before we hear it, is he actually doing anything on this track? Did he contribute to the synths, or was it?
Oh, no, he didn't.
Because I know some of them you sing and some of them he sings, and I wasn't sure how much of a collaboration this was.
Ah, good point. Yeah, actually, you know, I've never thought of that. No, he's doing nothing on this.
Okay.
It was musically mostly me. I was in the studio a lot, and this particular one sort of lent itself more to me rather than him.
A duet album, but this song is not a duet. It's just you doing your thing. Let's go here and we'll talk some more.
All those male hacks with their Tesco bags swim around in the concrete arcade. Those Sweatsville streets smell oh so sweet.
Pink out on a Tuesday is charming.
Like old tourists, we were charmed. Charmed by the obvious, we were disarmed by the Euro pop, that seductive slop.
Pink out on a Tuesday is charming.
He liked burger bars, they're always empty and full of fun. A like our shape, but with every escape.
Pink out on a Tuesday is charming.
Where UB40 are exotic and Mr. Gansburg is erotic. Walls have ears, even Joan of Arc is in tears.
Pink out on a Tuesday is charming.
And those mighty moustaches observe the absurd, cause like me, we're all part of the herd. Cause like you, we're all part of the herd.
Pink out on a Tuesday is charming.
I'm seduced by your sadness, I'm seduced by Bonner. I'm sickened by conservatives, I'm stricken by purr. I'm stricken by purr, I'm stricken by purr.
Pink out on a Tuesday is charming.
It's funny this, because I remember writing this because I lived for 3 months in a hotel in Paris. It was called the Hotel Ideal, believe it or not, and it was not ideal. It was rough as anything, but it was right in this Pigalle area, well, Montmartre on their area. I remember just writing it in a quick burger. I don't know if they exist anymore, quick burger places. It's quite a nice summation. I remember writing it on a Tuesday. Yes, I was in the morning. I was sitting there as one part of me three months because I was writing this album. Yeah. So it was actually written in situ, as it were, on spec in Pigalle, which is, a bit, like I say, in the burger bar.
Yeah. So also not a city, right? Drenthe, not a city. This one I actually Googled before we talked to say, oh, okay, this is the region of France, the Pigalle region of France, or sorry, region of Paris, of it, within Paris. So it's a neighborhood. Yeah.
Arrondissement, it's called, like the quarter of the area. It's called Ninth. Yeah. And you've got Montmartre just above it. So you've got them two mixed up. So I was between Montmartre and Pigalle. Montmartre is where traditionally a lot of the artists lived in Paris, and the musicians, you know, the Gymnopédies. Eric Satie lived in Montmartre, those sorts of characters. You know, there was quite a few musicians who lived there. So there was that area. And I stayed there. And Daniel lived in that area as well. You know, that's where he was brought up. I stayed there to write for 3 months, but I was lucky, you know, because I was signed to a label and I just thought, oh, let's do it there. And I was in my 20s, it didn't matter to me, so it was cool. It was every day was an adventure, believe you me.
Well, so a really interesting parallel then to Trentham, where you're also sitting in a garden or, you know, hanging out in the local describing. But this sounds, even though you're saying it's charming, the seductive slop, it's a much more cynical take.
It is a cynical take, but in your 20s, you tend to be. However, I do like the words. I mean, I still sing this sometimes. Like I'm just organizing a tour in France. And the thing is, I will play this because I like it. I like the parochial nature of it. You're in Paris. Paris is supposed to be the kind of city of light and all that. Like, oh, wow. And this is this area. It's all the male hags. I like that line. It's great. With their Tesco bags. Tesco is a supermarket, a very regional supermarket in Britain, right? It's not a market. It's not a fancy one. It's just a rough, you know, and you've got your Tesco bag. It's like, you know, it's like rough, you know what I mean? And it's just the idea of walking around. And that's what I used to do. I had a Tesco bag with my lyrics in, my words in and that. It seemed to be what I did. I was on some kind of a mission. What was wrong with me? Goodness me. Yeah, it was very, very simple-minded in those days, Mark.
So there's just like one place. He liked burger bars. They're always empty. Are you referring to another?
I'm creating a picture again. I'm not specifically talking about a particular character, but then again, I could be. I know it sounds evasive, but.
Well, that's just what I was wondering, given how short, again, concise storytelling. But here, because there's not actually anything that happens in the story, it's just you're referring to the stuff around you and a lot of specifics. But then growing to this critique of conformity, you know, we're all like me, we're all part of the herd, like you were all part of the herd. I'm sickened by conservatives. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sickened by purr. Yeah.
What is purr? I don't know what even you're referring to.
Purr is fear in French. Ah. P-E-R. Sorry, I'm picking by... What's the line after that? I can't remember.
It just says, I'm stricken by purr. I'm stricken by purr. I'm stricken by purr. Pig on Tuesday is charming. That's it.
I'm sickened. I'm stricken. I know. Stricken as in you can't move. Sickened as in you feel sick. Well, at the time it was Thatcher's Britain, and you know, the whole idea of the self, we've got to get on, let's, you know, crush everybody else. It was horrible. And she really represented things that really, unfortunately, we're still feeling, because people aren't naturally like that. That really kind of had an impact. It was such a sea change of attitude from communal to self.
Yeah. So any thought about how this sort of general critique at the end is coming out of sort of just ripping on the aesthetics of the gross environment that you're in?
In a way, it was beautiful. I think there's beauty in that. Uh-huh. That where I was. Oh, God, yeah. This was
You're being charmed by it. It's seductive slop, right?
So that's why I've said.
It's still seductive.
I'm charmed by it. Yeah. It's seductive, exactly. It is seductive, but are burger bars, are they particularly not slop? They're kind of two things, aren't they? But it is seductive. It's alliteration, isn't it, as well? But the actual meaning of it is clear as well. With the Europop, now Europop was very kind of funneled through quick burger bars. You'd have all these kind of Europop going on in France, in these sorts of places. With the Europop, that seductive slop. So, you know, obviously the person was listening to that. He was seduced by it. But at the same time, he realized that the whole nature of the muzak element of it, or the, you know, the sloppy element of it. So again, it's quite concisely written, isn't it?
And are you referring to sort of the sort of provincial feeling that was, why would you be 40, right? A British band with some reggae gestures, you know, that's considered exotic in that part of France.
Well, UB40 are exotic, yeah, in Paris. Now, that's interesting. They are seen totally differently. They were. You know what UB40 means. It's the unemployment benefit card that you used to get if you hadn't got a job.
You know, I didn't know that. I did not know where that came from.
It's UB40. Well, that's what it was called then.
All the red wine that went on the radio, they never mentioned that.
They didn't know. They wouldn't have mentioned that. I mean, and at the time, they were from Birmingham, which wasn't that far away from here. Mm-hmm. You know, they were seen as quite a rootsy band initially, because this went initially. But in France, they became, or in Europe, they became celebrated as quite exotic. And then Mr. Gainsbourg is erotic. That's Serge Gainsbourg.
Yes.
You know, and all that. I mean, that's, you know, but I like the exotic and erotic idea. We know that he was regarded as that. It's the mixture of provincial England, and then the capital of light, the kind of like the glorious nature of a kind of well-regarded, glamorous city. It's the two things are quite interesting, that this guy is, and he's sitting in, let's face it, a fast food chain. You know what I mean? He's not sitting in Cafe Flo, which is a very, very upmarket Paris restaurant. But he really does do that, because that person was me. I was sitting there. And those mighty moustaches observed the absurd. When I first went to France and Paris at the time, I was always impressed, very struck by the people who ran bars and the people who kind of waiters and stuff, who had these amazingly fantastic moustaches, like moustaches, like curly moustaches. They're brilliant. And I thought they were works of art. I thought they were amazing, because I've never seen them in England. Do you know what I mean? I thought, wow, these are cool.
Takes a lot of effort.
Yeah, yeah. Observe the absurd. Observe the absurd. So they're seeing this weird stuff going on, you know. Because like me, they're all part of the herd. Yeah, yeah. So we're all watching it. We're all the same, basically. That's like an anti-Thatcher line, that, if you want. So that's why it moves on to there. I mean, I'm analysing it as if I know what I'm talking about. I haven't got a clue. Like you say, I ain't got a clue. But it's quite interesting to analyse your own stuff from years, you know, from.
Do you remember why, from an engineering perspective, you had the, every time you say the pig ale on a Tuesday is charming, you have to put the filter on it and have it, you know, was that just a mixing decision that someone made, or was that something you thought had to happen?
We decided I wanted it to be kind of like a phone thing. Mm. You know, I was like that. Everybody did. In the 60s, there was a Grand Chester Cathedral. There's a song in the 60s which was a hit, and it was like this phone thing. And I always thought that's a really, that's brilliant, that is. I love that. So I put that on the end just as a kind of pig on and cheese. It's charming. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I feel like that came back in the aughts. This engineer that I've used for a couple of things, he would keep in my mixing, like, let's make that kind of effect on this. I don't know. There are a bunch of pop songs that we're using that trick again.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, things come back, don't they? They have their day and then they go away and their day returns.
Sure. When it becomes digitally really easy to do it is when...
That is true, yeah.
Let me play just the very end of the song to hear. We haven't really talked how you end any of these songs.
Big Isle on a Tuesday is charming.
You had set up this techno, this intro. You could have at least added another 30 seconds of like letting that go.
Yeah,
and I'm still sitting in the cafe and there's still stuff going on. Maybe have a little solo of some sort over it. But instead, we're going to like make this as concise as possible.
Yeah, less is more, as they say. You know, the cliches are true, less is more. I like the concise nature of pop. That's the thing that's always fascinated me. I love short stories. I love reading short stories and that. That's the thing, Mark, that has always, always driven and fascinated me, is how you can utilize those 3 minutes to tell a story, to create an atmosphere. Because also, you're creating loads of colors and things like that. It's a magical thing. It's a great privilege to be able to write this stuff or to play this stuff. And I love the fact that I've only got a few minutes, you know?
Well, let's just wrap up here by introducing the last song. We wanted to just, end with another plug for the new album. And I had picked the title track. So we're for once not hearing a little bubbly jangle pop or something. This is a more sort of romantic, still in the same general world as the other stuff that at least the first two songs that we discussed here. Yeah, you want to say just a little more about this track or what you're doing now?
Haunted was added on at the right at the end. I'd written it before and I had the actual chorus that kept playing around in my head. I played it and I sort of wasn't sure about it, never quite worked. Somebody asked me to write a song, so this must be a few years ago, a version of it for Jane Birkin. She died a few years ago, so I might be wrong with that. But anyway, I think it's the closest thing I've written on this album to a love song. There you go.
Yeah, well, this is definitely another one that hits me in the gut a little bit. So I really enjoyed throughout listening to your stuff. Today was the first time I was found on YouTube some of your first album and how, in addition to it being more synth, though, it's generally more dark. So much of the recent stuff since your reemergence, how can I craft the prettiest pop song, that's as concise as possible? And the fact that you can do that again and again, and I don't feel like, oh, this is the same melody I've heard four times before, without adding a lot of crazy extra chords, right? You're not stacking a lot of ninths and thirteenths and things like that. Right?
I mean, to be fair, I've used the same three chords for 40 years, got by, what I mean?
Sure.
Not quite. But it's very much the basis of things, isn't it? Because things are very simple at their basis, and then you can do all sorts of things with it. But thanks for that, Mark. Yeah, it's a nice sort of thought, that is. I'm obsessed by writing, the idea of writing the perfect pop song. And there are some songs that have got very close in my head. I mean, like the Lars, There She Goes, I think is one of the most brilliant pop songs I've heard. And then I went on a sort of a pilgrimage with one of my daughters who'd never heard of this person to a place called the Cliss Old Arms in Denmark Street in Muswell Hill, which is in London, because that's where Ray Davies and Dave Davies were brought up from the Kinks. There's a couple of songs. Obviously, Waterloo Sunset is very close to being the most brilliant pop song ever written. That's very close. I know it's an obvious one, but there's a song called Shangri-La that I was loved by him. That for me was just amazing. Yeah, I've always been an absolute fan of the pop song.
Victoria might be my favorite. That's
just Victoria's amazing. And the Falls version of Victoria. Have you heard the Falls?
Yes, yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, Marky Smith.
Oh, I wish he was still alive. I'd love to talk.
Oh, he's an amazing bloke. Oh, he's mad. He lived not far from here. He was brilliant, man. He was brilliant. That Elastic Man and the Curious Orange. Oh, man. What a lyricist. What a talented lyricist. He was just a poet, you know?
All right. Well, wonderful to getting to know your point of view, getting a secondhand view of Stoke. Good luck promoting the album.
Thank you very much, Mark. Yeah, it's been brilliant.
All right, here's Haunted.
Oh, what a dance. You lead and I'll follow, follow you tomorrow. Now you drink green tea by a clear blue ocean, waves the only motion. I just wanna say that all in all it's better this way. Cause I'm haunted, haunted by everything we did. I'm haunted by all the facts we hid. It wasn't always light, it was sometimes heavy. I had to take a back seat. But when it was bright, I have never known that it was so electric. I just wanna say that all in all it's better this way. I'm haunted, haunted by everything. I'm haunted by all the facts we hate. I'm haunted, haunted by everything we said. I'm haunted by the unique life we led. Is my slogan, you will never meet the true man in the end. Here is my slogan, you will never meet the true man in the end. Still haunted, haunted by everything we did. Still haunted by all the facts we hid. I'm haunted, haunted by everything we said. I'm haunted by the unique life. Haunted by everything we did, but still haunted by all the facts we hid. I'm haunted, haunted by everything we said. I'm haunted by the unique life we led.
Thanks so much to Bill. I really, in prepping for this, developed a deep affection for these perfect little pop tunes. You can get more information about his music at BillPritchardMusic.com. On the blog post associated with this episode at NakedlyExaminedMusic.com, I put links to some of his videos, some of his live performances, and of course you'll find links there to subscribe directly to the show if you're not subscribed already. You will not want to miss my next episode interviewing Alan Williams, because he is somebody you should have heard of, and I've got some other great episodes I'm planning for right now. I have a Spotify playlist of all these songs from all the episodes, including ones I'm just considering, so you might want to follow that. As always, I encourage you to support me at patreon.com/nakedlyexaminedmusic. That will ensure that this podcast keeps happening. I'd also love if you leave me a nice 5-star rating review on Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to this. Feel free to reach out to me at mark@nakedlyexaminedmusic.com to request a guest, to volunteer yourself as a guest. Just say hi. Happy spring. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're being creative. Keep on musicking. Until next time, this is Mark Lintonmeyer signing off.
Marketing is hard, but I'll tell you a little secret. It doesn't have to be. Let me point something out. You're listening to a podcast right now, and it's great. You love the host, you seek it out and download it. You listen to it on the train, working out, cooking, even going to the loo. Podcasts are a pretty close companion, and this is a podcast ad. Did I get your attention? You can reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Libsyn Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements or run a pre-produced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience in their favorite podcasts with Libsyn Ads. Go to libsynads.com today. That's libsynads.com. Libsynads.com.